DW Africa Link.
A warm welcome to Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I am Mimi Mefu.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. Coming up on the program, Nigeria to repatriate nearly 600 of its citizens out of South Africa due to the ongoing xenophobic violence.
Such a big number of people are being sent back. It's a statement to South Africa to say you have failed to protect our people and this is what we're going to do. Now it can no longer afford to just talk and do nothing, but it is time for action.
Nigerian businessmen in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon are also paying a huge price as the conflict deepens.
Nigerians in that two regions have suffered a lot. You know, we don't depend on salaries, we depend on our business. And when you see they are not doing business, they have children, many of them have packed to Yaounde, to Douala, to Bafoussam.
And stay tuned for these stories coming up just after the news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Nigeria said on Monday that it will repatriate about 600 citizens from South Africa following a wave of xenophobic violence that caused tensions between the two countries. In South Africa, Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor met with African ambassadors today to reassure them concerning the government's efforts to stop the violence.
It was agreed that a commission involving all stakeholders should be formed and hit the ground running, try to come up with solutions as well as getting to the residents and trying to conscientize them about living in peace with other Africans. Also, importantly, it was agreed that leaders who say statements that inflame this violence should be cautioned and also should be punished wherever possible.
That was DW's correspondent in South Africa, Thuso Khumalo. On Sunday, a new surge of violence left two dead in Johannesburg, bringing the total up to 12 in the recent spate of attacks which are targeting foreign-owned businesses in and around South Africa's largest city. In northern Burkina Faso, at least 30 people were killed in two attacks. Authorities suspect Islamic terrorists. Many of the killed were drivers of the vans which carry provisions for people displaced by fighting between the army and insurgents. South Sudan's exiled rebel leader Riek Machar arrived in Juba on Monday for the first time in a year to meet his rival President Salva Kiir and try to salvage a stalled peace agreement. Machar's visit is expected to last 2 days. It comes before a November deadline to form a power-sharing government, as agreed in a 2018 peace pact that has been delayed by disputes. In Mauritius today, the leader of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, expressed concern about growing drug use among the youth on the island. Mauritius was the last stop of a tour which took the Pope to Mozambique and Madagascar, two of the world's poorest nations. This news is brought to you by DW in Bonn. A major report by 41 health experts maintains that malaria can be eradicated by 2050. This contradicted the conclusions last month of a malaria review by the World Health Organization. The experts say a concerted effort and funding to the amount of $2 billion per year would ensure a malaria-free world. Afghanis were bracing for a possible new wave of Taliban violence on Monday after President Donald Trump abruptly cancelled talks with the insurgent group. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo defended Trump's decision in the wake of a terrorist attack that killed 12 people, including an American soldier in Afghanistan.
We finally reached a point where we were close. We'd made real progress, and then the Taliban failed to live up to a series of commitments that they had made. And when that happened, President Trump said, I'm not going to take that deal. I'm not going to work with someone that can't deliver on their commitments.
Pro-Kremlin candidates suffered major losses in a Moscow city election on Sunday. Kremlin-backed representatives previously held 38 of the Moscow Assembly's 45 seats, but after voting, that was down to 25. Opposition leader Alexei Navalny, who called the first summer protests after his allies were kept off the ballot paper, had also called on voters to back the politicians most likely to be the pro-Kremlin candidate, whatever the affiliation. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
This is Africa Link, and we are coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Mimi Mefo. We are equally live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We also need you to know what you think about topics for today. Join the debate live on our Facebook page.
Indeed, Most of you have already started commenting there. Tutu Desnick, as usual, CC Bell, you guys are always there. Thank you so much for being there. Now, let's move the story right into it. In a short while, we will bring you the story of Nigeria's plans to repatriate nearly 600 of its citizens out of South Africa due to the xenophobic violence. But first, let's talk about the hundreds of thousands of Nigerians who are stuck in Cameroon's conflict-ridden English-speaking regions.
Now, these Nigerians are calling on their government to come to their rescue after at least 20 of them are said to have died as a result of the crisis in Cameroon's English-speaking regions. Some stranded traders have lost all of their goods and are seeking refuge in safer French-speaking towns. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of Nigerians, along with Cameroonians, pray at the St. Joseph Anglophone Parish in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, asking God to bring peace to Cameroon's restive English-speaking regions. Among the Christians is 27-year-old Ngozi Esther, who escaped with her three children and husband from the town of Kumbu after they were attacked recently by suspected separatists.
I pleaded with them that I am a Nigerian, but they have insisted that since they are using the money from the taxes I pay to buy weapons and kill Anglophones, I'm supporting the crisis, and they burnt all of my goods and they destroyed everything I was doing.
Joseph Ukwambila, president of the Nigerian Union in Yaoundé, says they have received at least 100 Nigerians fleeing the crisis in the Anglophone regions. He says Nigerians have lost relatives while many were kidnapped and only released after a ransom was paid.
Nigerians in that two region have suffered a lot. You know, we don't depend on salaries, we depend on our business. And when you see they are not doing business, they have children, they have house rent to pay, they have electricity bill to pay, water bill to pay and other things. They are suffering a lot. Many of them have packed to Yaoundé, to Douala, to Bafoussam. We received them and we rent them what to do. Maybe some of them who are doing restaurants, we make sure that we get a place for them to continue selling their restaurants because we have to help them out.
Since Friday, a series of special church services have been organized in Yaoundé to raise money to assist stranded Nigerians. But Ukambila says a lasting solution to the crisis can only be achieved through dialogue.
There should be dialogue, because there is nothing in this world that cannot be resolved on a round table. There should be a change of ideas so that peace will come back to this great nation. We suffer civil war in Nigeria, and we know what it means.
Over 2 million Nigerians live in Cameroon's English-speaking regions.
That was Moki Edwin Kiseka with that report there from Yaoundé.
And that was, of course, Moki Edwin Kinzeka and Abu,
we have some
I should
of the
say
responses
that
there, indeed,
certainly
yeah.
We have Nigerians who actually reacted, Cameroonians as well, reacting on our Facebook page. We have Louis Njakwa, who says that it's a failure on the part of the Nigerian government, which is also common in most African countries.
We will definitely get to more of those comments there, Mimi. But still on the subject of rescue and repatriation, Nigeria has taken a giant step as its citizens face xenophobic attacks in South Africa.
At a meeting of South or African diplomats and South Africa's foreign minister today, Nigeria said that it would repatriate 600 of its citizens from South Africa. Earlier today, I spoke with DW's Tuzo Kumalo in South Africa on how the government of Cyril Ramaphosa plans to address recent surge in violence. He begins by telling me about the focus of today's meeting.
Very crucial meeting indeed. After the meeting, it came out that the Nigerian Consul General, Godwin Adama, announcing that his government will, as early as this week, repatriate about up to 600 Nigerians back home. We'll discover that most of the properties that were destroyed, especially hundreds of cars, they belonged to Nigerian businesses. So this does not reflect a good relationship between South Africa and Nigeria at the moment. But South African Minister of Foreign Affairs, Naledi Pandor, coming out saying South Africa is doing its best to end the violence and the targeting of foreigners' properties, and also asking ambassadors to help find solutions to some of the things that are happening in the country.
We understand that a similar meeting was called 6 months ago. That was in the month of March 2019. What change can today's meeting bring as far as putting an end to xenophobic attacks is concerned?
There was also disappointment from some ambassadors that what was agreed in that March meeting has not materialized. But now the agreement is that police should be more proactive than reactive when things have already gone astray. Also that it was agreed that a commission involving all stakeholders should be formed and hit the ground running, try to come up with solutions, as well as getting to the people there and residents, and trying to conscientize them about living in peace with other Africans, that it is important for Africans to unite and not fight each other.
And what are South African politicians saying about the recent attacks on foreigners?
President Cyril Ramaphosa today issued one of his strongest statements when it comes to this, obviously upset that there was a resurgence of violence again. If I can quote from the statement, saying law enforcement agencies should maintain vigilance and firmness in dealing with individuals or groups that take the law into their own hands. Also saying those who upset the country's public order must expect to face the gravest impact of the law. So this is one of Ramaphosa's strongest statements, showing that the government is now deciding to end this.
But critics would say that they are tired of statements and that the time for action is now.
Definitely, I think the ambassadors have spoken very well to that note, because they've cited also that since 2008, these attacks have been happening, statements have been made, but no action has followed. And now saying they don't want talks, they want actions. And I think Nigeria have acted. If we see that such a big number of people are being sent back, it's a statement to South Africa to say, you have failed to protect our people and this is what we're going to do. Now it can no longer afford to just talk and do nothing, but it is time for action.
That is Thuso Khumalo there, speaking from South Africa. And Abu, it was a heated debate on our Facebook page.
Indeed, so many of you are talking about this story. So let's get some of your comments right away. Nelson Ajone says, when Nigeria has fueled this present crisis in the English part of Cameroon by handing over Ayuk Gabe and Co. to the Cameroonian government. So they are just getting their share of the cake.
Certainly, that is the Cameroonians reacting on the situation in Cameroon. And now on the situation of evacuating South or Nigerians from South Africa, Manfred Fosu says that bringing them back is not the problem. Our problem is poor governance.
This story is so similar, actually. Repatriating Nigerians out of Cameroon and also repatriating Nigerians out of South Africa. We have a comment here from Buze Yannick Ezuse. Thank you for this info. Nigeria as a nation was considered one who could help but put an end to the conflict in Cameroon, but the world still considered it as a crisis.
We see many of you joining us live on our Facebook page. Just be part of the debate. We want to know what you think about our topics for today. On to something else, Abu. The British Prime Minister, or the British Parliament, begins a 5-week suspension later today. Lawmakers are being sent home regardless of how they vote on the PM's call for a snap general election, though another rejection is likely.
Now, Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been holding British Brexit talks with his Irish counterpart Leo Varadkar in Dublin. DW's Brigitte Maas has been there speaking with, and now she's been speaking with British MP Andrew Marr. Take a listen.
What is your reaction? You are actually not sitting anymore as of today.
I think it's a disgrace. I'll be honest with you and frank with you, it's a disgrace. We're at a time of national crisis, constitutional crisis, economic crisis, and Boris Johnson doesn't even want Parliament to sit. I think this asks real questions of his plans, and if he even knows what he's doing. Parliament should be sitting right now.
If you had the opportunity to sit, what would you be able to do?
Well, if we're able to sit, we're able to debate and discuss our future relationship with our European partners. We'd be able to prepare for the future. I think our European partners in Germany and France, the Netherlands and elsewhere must be looking on in absolute astonishment in what's going on. At this time when the UK is clearly in crisis, that Parliament cannot even sit to discuss these key issues at the moment, it defies belief.
Andrew Marr there. Now, in another dramatic Brexit news, the Speaker of Parliament, John Bacow, says he will step down within weeks. Keep your comment coming on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You are listening to DW's Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Mimi Mefo. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Speaking of Facebook there, Mimi.
Certainly.
Some of you are commenting and the debate is going on. And we would also welcome our listeners from different partner stations across Africa. Always happy to have you there. But you can also come to Facebook, DW Africa, and leave us your comments there. Join the debate. Talk about the issues that we are basically presenting to you.
Let's know what you think about our topics for today, Abu.
Indeed. Now, let's delve into this next 15 minutes. To sterilize or not to sterilize, men in Uganda debate the health and social benefit of sterilization to prevent unwanted pregnancies.
Life nowadays is becoming hard. I had to make a permanent decision. I sat with my wife. We shared the ideas. Many people were saying when you go for that thing, you'll be impotent.
We also bring to you Football World Cup group stages qualifications. We have all the results from the weekend matches.
I can't wait for that. Indeed.
Those stories, of course, will be coming up shortly. That is just in a moment. But first, Mauritius is the last stop of Pope Francis's visit to Africa. The small island in the Indian Ocean is said to be a model of religious tolerance and diversity.
A place which illustrates that is the shrine of Blessed Père Lavale, which attracts pilgrims of all confessions. The Pope will visit it today. Our correspondent Adrian Krish has also been there before and sent us this report, now presented by Carolyn Bourne.
An interfaith family outing to the grave of Jacques Désiré Laval, a beatified French missionary. Anne-Marie is Christian and has brought yellow gerbera to the grave.
If I have problems, I come here to talk about it with Father Laval. The answer doesn't always come right away, but it does come.
Each year, Anne-Marie comes here together with her family. Asha was born a Hindu, but is now a Christian. Bani Mandop is Hindu and wears a women's garment from Indian subcontinent known as turquoise sari.
I usually pray for the children. I want them to be grow nicely, give them good health and good education, good manners. That is important. The way the children are going now, growing, manners and good habits are very important.
The three women make their way inside the church, where lots of people surround the transparent grave with a reproduction of Father Laval inside. Anne-Marie hands over her flowers to an employee who puts it on the grave. In the middle of the 19th century, Laval is said to have converted tens of thousands of people in Mauritius. But he did more than just preaching. He treated well freed slaves and gave a voice to the poor. Many here still call him the Apostle of Mauritius, says parish priest André Sunassi.
Father Laval is important to everyone on Mauritius. He is a symbol of the country's unity. People flock to him. You can see it at his gravesite. People from all religions and cultures honor him as a spiritual father and as a father figure.
Half of the population of Mauritius is Hindu. The rest is made up of Christians, Muslims and Buddhists. In Mauritius, you can find a Hindu temple right next to a mosque. It is a very religious country and very tolerant nation. Big signs welcome the Pope. His visit is a special honor for all faith in Mauritius, including Muslims like Rahib Boudou.
The whole Muslim community here welcomes the Pope. After all, we are one people. We were thrilled when Pope John Paul II visited in 1989. We're just as thrilled by the current Pope's visit. We welcome everyone who stands for peace.
After praying inside the cathedral, Benny Mandup has tears in her eyes. She and her family are visibly moved after their visit to Father Laval's grave.
I don't know. You can't explain.
Benny Mandup says Father Laval gave her strength. Next year, at the latest, the family will reunite to come back here.
That report there by Adrienne Krish was being presented by Caroline Bonn.
Health check.
Time to check our health, indeed. Ugandan men are still opposed to undergoing vasectomy surgery, attributing their unwillingness to meet that they will not be able to enjoy sex anymore. Others equate the procedure to castration, fearing that their wives will divorce them at some point in life.
Now, Abu, what is vasectomy? It is a surgical procedure for male sterilization, permanent contraception, when their tubes during the procedure are cut and tied or sealed so as to prevent sperm from fertilization through sexual intercourse with a female.
Now, the fear by men to undergo this procedure is reflected in statistics from Mary Stopes, a reproductive health organization. Now, this report, Frankie Yiga has been finding out and filed this report from Kampala.
I went to Liberty Medical Clinic in Namuongo to find out whether men adhere to family planning methods by undertaking vasectomy. Rose Ayo, the nurse in charge of services here, tells me her clients are mainly women, but she receives about 3 men each month out of 70 women.
When we're doing vasectomy, they say, don't tell anybody I've done this. Just between me and you. You know, men are greedy. That's what I can say.
But not all men are selfish and greedy, like Rose says. 48-year-old David Kasada, a father of 6 in Bugerere town, consulted his wife before undergoing this surgery. He tells me at first he was scared, but when his wife produced twins, he got worried of how he would provide for more than that.
Life nowadays is becoming hard. I had to make a permanent decision. I sat with my wife, we shared the ideas. You know, many people were saying when you go for that thing, you'll be impotent, you'll never function again. But I'm very okay, I'm normal, I don't regret at all.
The fear of impotence is what's driving many men away from undergoing this procedure. But studies show men who have done a vasectomy are not at a higher risk of heart disease, prostate cancer, testicular cancer, or other health problems. Dr. Milton Awudo, Director, Technical Services at Mary Stopes Uganda, a reproductive health NGO, says the number of vasectomies carried out is still low. Taboo is one of the major problems.
The myth is the biggest because men tend to equate vasectomy to castration. The man will think this procedure is just like the one they do for animals, because for animals also when they do castration, the male animal will not produce.
Dean Chibirige, a traditionalist, disagrees with the idea of men putting a stop on producing children through this procedure. He tells me culture and tradition are static and should not be tampered with.
Vasectomy in Africa is a taboo. We cherish, we believe resurrection as African is through our offspring. A man would be seen as someone who is committing suicide by undergoing vasectomy.
Vasectomy is minor surgery to block sperm from reaching the semen that is ejaculated from the penis. After a vasectomy procedure, the tests still make sperm, but they are soaked up by the body. This is different from castration, which is what many equate vasectomy. According to Dr. Placid Mihayo of Ministry of Health,
it's still a challenge. Very few men have understood the concept, and even some women, they equate vasectomy to castration, which is not correct.
Several studies show vasectomy prevents pregnancy better than any other method of birth control, except abstinence. After the minor surgical procedure, you shouldn't notice any change in your ejaculate, orgasm, or become impotent.
That was Frank Yiga from Uganda. We talk sports in a moment.
Africa Link. Sport.
Indeed, one of my favorite parts of the show.
Certainly.
The recent deadly riots in South Africa has had a huge blow on sports events scheduled around the weekend on the African continent. At least three matches were cancelled, with some athletes calling for an end to xenophobic attacks.
Meanwhile, African qualifying matches for the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 continued, with Ethiopia, Liberia and Tanzania securing their places in the next round. DW Sports correspondent Samson O'Malley says that 10 more matches are lined up to be played on Tuesday, that's tomorrow.
Ethiopia booked their place in the next round after an away 1-1 draw against Lesotho in Maseru in the preliminary round of qualification to the group phase of the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022. The Warriors advanced on the away goal rule after a 1-1 tie on aggregate. In Dar es Salaam, Tanzania's Taifa Stars progressed to the group phase with a 3-0 post-match penalties win over Burundi in the second leg of the preliminary round of qualification on Sunday. In Freetown, the Lone Star of Liberia lost 1-0 to Sierra Leone's Lone Stars, but still made it to the group stage on a 3-2 aggregate. Lone Stars team captain Umaru Zangalai failed to convert a late gaps penalty into a goal that would have put Sierra Leone through. Angry fans later vandalized his house. Madagascar became the second team in the week to pull out of an international friendly against South Africa over concerns around the xenophobic attacks that have shaken the country. Zambia were originally due to host South Africa in Lusaka on Saturday, but pulled out of the match in protest, citing security concerns following the violent attacks on foreign-owned shops in Johannesburg and Pretoria. Bafana Bafana midfielder Bongani Zungu has appealed to South Africans to stop the current attacks on foreign nationals.
As for me and some of the guys, we play overseas with foreigners in other countries. You know, it's sad, you know, to see what's going on in the country. And also we've got friends in our teams there in Europe. You know, they ask us questions, you know, what's going on, bro? You know, like, you're killing our brothers. And, you know, and it's quite sad.
Football fans expressed mixed concerns over the current development in South Africa.
Were any action that mars development of football or progress of football is a terrible one, and xenophobic attack in South Africa has been one.
Nigeria has booked a slot to the Tokyo 2020 Olympics after a win over host China 83-76 on Sunday at the FIBA Basketball World Cup to confirm their place as the best-ranked team in Africa. This will be Nigeria's third consecutive Olympics appearance after they made their debut at the London 2012 Olympics. Nigeria's team captain Ike Diogo reacts to their win over host nation China.
Both teams had an Olympic bid at stake, but I felt like as the tournament went on, we got better and better. And we said that when we were in a moment like this, like when we were up by 8 points with 5 minutes left against Russia and we squandered the lead away, that we were going to get a chance to redeem ourselves, and that's what we did today.
In other classification matches, Tunisia escaped with a nail-biting 86-84 victory over African rival Angola, while Korea nipped Cote d'Ivoire with an 80-71 victory to close out their respective campaigns with a victory and a spot in the 17-20 and 25-28 rankings in that order. In athletics news, London Marathon champion Bridget Kosgei on Sunday made history as she shattered the Great North Run women's course record in the UK, as well as running the fastest women's half marathon in a time of 1 hour, 4 minutes, 28 seconds.
That is Samson O'Malley there reporting from Nigeria on sports across the African continent, Abu.
Mimi, can you believe this? Malaria gone by 2050. Can you imagine a world without malaria?
We really hope so, because it's one of the killer diseases, not just in the African continent, but in the world at large.
Indeed, that's the story we've been covering on our Facebook page, DW Africa. It's about a recent study published yesterday that basically says that malaria could be eradicated by 2050. That is, if the extremely tough measure, which is using gene therapy to make this work out, and an additional $2 billion of funding is added into this, and malaria could be wiped out of the planet by 2050.
That's quite some good news, Abu. We know that statistics are very clear. UN statistics indicate that hundreds of children under the age of five die almost every day in the African continent
as a
result of malaria.
A lot of children do die because of malaria, because they are mostly vulnerable to this. And it's the first time, actually, that professionals come out and say there is light at the end of the tunnel with malaria. Anyways, we have some of your comments here. Sengezo says, well, really, that's like 30 plus years. I believe that malaria thrive in particular condition, and it is not a matter of health only, but the conditions of life where it thrives. He has a point there.
And Wallace, on his part, says that pharmaceutical industry are really sucking the world dry, and others are thinking that sadly the world is investing in weaponry.
That's all we have time for by now.
DW Made for Minds.